Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This is WEEI Late Night with Brian Barrett.
I'm like, no, I don't want to go to Boston because I want to go to Phoenix because it's nice weather out here. You know, I'll be able to play. I'm going to be able to average 20. I was like, Boston, they just went to the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm not going to play. I'm like, no, I don't want to go to Boston.
All right, welcome in. Brian Barrett with you for the next hour or so. So how about that? The Red Sox back-to-back wins after this 7-1 W over the Baltimore Orioles tonight. Back-to-back wins for the Red Sox, which means tomorrow against the Orioles, they can get their season-long winning streak, which would be three games. Can they do it tomorrow, baby? How about three in a row? 617-779-7937 is your number. Now, it's very difficult for me at this particular point in time to get excited about individual Red Sox wins since this is, yeah, two in a row. I get all that. But Nathan Eovaldi tonight, yeah, he had a great outing for him. Seven innings, five hits, six strikeouts. But if you look at the totality of his season, I can't get too excited over one win over a Baltimore team that I get has overachieved so far this season. But let's be real. It's not a great baseball team. You look at Nathan Eovaldi's season. He's had two good starts against the Orioles. That's it. Two good starts against the Orioles. That's it. Decent start against the Jays. Okay, had a lot of strikeouts. Did not go deep in that game. He was decent against the Mets, but he only gave you five innings. So two good starts, two decent starts. He was atrocious against the Yankees. Gave up eight earned runs. And then he was bad against the Rays. Four earned in five innings of that game. So when I just look at the total season for Nathan Eovaldi, I'm not going to get all excited because he had one decent start against the Orioles, or I should say two good starts against the Orioles. And other than that, he hasn't really performed that well. And this is what he is. He is a middle-of-the-rotation guy at best and ideally a back-end-of-the-rotation guy. So if that's what you were looking for this season from Nathan Eovaldi, then you're happy. You got the guy that could be a starting pitcher for you for the next couple of years coming off the elbow issues he had all of last year after he had the loose bodies taken from his elbow. And after that, he didn't know if he was going to be a starter or was he going to come out of the bullpen. And quite frankly, he didn't perform at a high level whatsoever at any point last season. So this is improvement for Nathan Eovaldi. But this is not the guy that's going to go out there every 5 days and give you seven innings of work. We've seen it. And for the most part this season, when he goes through the lineup for the third time, he isn't great. Now, tonight it was different. He did give up the home run late to Valleca, but other than that, he pitched really well tonight. But I'm not going to buy into this version of Nathan Eovaldi for one game tonight because this is not the total resume of the player throughout his career and even the resume that he's put on paper this season. Third time through the lineup this season, he has an opponent's batting average of .444, an opponent's slugging percentage over 1,000. And if you look at it, he's been hammered the third time through the lineup all season long. So, yeah, he got through it tonight. Credit to him, but it's not against the Yankees. It's not against the Rays. When he pitched against good teams, the Rays and the Yankees, he got hammered, and he wasn't the guy that you thought he could possibly be after the great start to begin the season. So, great start for Nathan Eovaldi, but he should pitch well against a Baltimore Orioles team that, in my mind, is not very talented. If you're looking for silver linings right now with the Red Sox, you look at the fact that Devers 2-for-5 tonight. Last eight games, he's 12 of 37, hitting .324. That's great. You wanted to see him turn his season around at the plate because at the beginning of the season, it wasn't good enough. This is a guy that I understand he's only 23. He's young, but let's face facts. He came into summer camp. He was out of shape. He was not performing defensively at the beginning of the season, and he hadn't figured it out until the last 9-10 games or so, and now we've seen a much better Rafael Devers. He's starting to look like the guy, or at least resemble the guy that we saw a season ago when you saw him and you said, this guy could be one of the better players in the entire sport. And finally, over the last 10 days or so, we're seeing that guy last eight games hitting 324. That's a silver lining. Then you start to think about Mitch Moreland. He's hitting 360 on the season now with seven home runs. Nobody saw that season coming from Mitch Moreland. And I'm a fan of Mitch Moreland's game. Obviously, gold glove caliber first baseman. But I did not expect this type of offensive output from Mitch Moreland this season. He's been incredible. Absolutely outstanding season from Mitch Moreland. The only thing I would say is it feels like you're wasting it because the Red Sox are in the basement in the American League East. So you're getting this great season out of Mitch Moreland. And quite frankly, the team has not performed whatsoever. Which brings me to the trading deadline, and you'll see if this team can move Mitch Moreland. And you would think that it would be an interesting piece for a team to add. Oh, and get a gold glove caliber first baseman that has power at the plate. That's an appealing thing to teams. Now, you're not going to get a whole lot. He's in the final year of his contract, and he keeps signing short-term deals, but you should be able to get at least a prospect for Mitch Moreland. Chaim Bloom was asked about Xander Bogaerts, and here's what he had to say about Bogaerts. Quote, I think philosophically, I would never want to come out and just unequivocally say somebody is untouchable. I don't think anyone should read anything into that in regard to Bogey or anybody else. This is after the comments last week about nobody being untouchable. He said, I just think for me, we're not doing our job if we're not listening on anything. That's part of our job. We have to be open to whatever can improve the organization. That said, Xander is a core player for us. He's a key part. Obviously, he's a key part of our team now. And he is a key part of what we're trying to accomplish here. He's not just a great player, but he's a tremendous person to have as a leader in our organization. I don't think we're doing our job if we're not listening, but it doesn't mean that it's something we're trying to do by any stretch. He went on to comment on Devers and Bogaerts this week. He said, that's simple. Those guys are the core players for us. They're incredibly important to our future, just as they've been important here for a while. Philosophically, I don't think in terms of absolute no's, but those guys are key players for us. We're very hopeful that they're going to be part of our next championship here. I believe Chaim Bloom handled these questions really well. What it sounds like to me is we're not interested in moving Bogaerts or Devers whatsoever. They are part of the next great Red Sox team, which he made abundantly clear. But he's never going to say, no way whatsoever we're going to trade a player, because if you get wowed by an offer, you may consider moving the guy. And if you did move the guy after making a comment saying these guys are untouchable, you look like a hypocrite. But basically, you heard Chaim Bloom. He's saying
to
no.
To say that somebody is truly untouchable, you're probably lying to yourself and lying to a player.
But the main part of that is he said these are our core guys. They're part of the next great Red Sox team. And in my mind, I don't see the benefit of moving either one of these guys. Now, Bogaerts, I get it. He's in a situation contractually where basically after this trading deadline, he's going to have a no-trade clause. And you're going to have to go by him if you are going to trade him. And he's got an opt-out after the 2022 season, but that's 2 years away. And then you think about Devers. There's no way you're moving that guy. He's in his age 23-year-old season. And as a 22-year-old, he had 311 with 32 home runs and 54 doubles. He's just up for his first year of arbitration this upcoming offseason. So here's my whole thing about these two players in particular. So I get it in terms of Bogaerts' contract, but the opt-out's 2 years from now. And he's only 27. I believe the player's going to age well, considering the fact he's a big dude, 6'1", big guy, can hit the ball the opposite way, can do everything on a baseball field. But here's my whole thing. I understand rebuilding and restructuring, etc., but what do you expect to get back for Xander Bogaerts? You're hoping that at least one of the guys you'd be picking up in return for Xander Bogaerts would be as good as Bogaerts in the future. So if you have that guy right now that plays one of the most important positions in the sport, I don't understand trading the player whatsoever. He had a home run tonight, by the way, and if you look at it last year, his OPS best among shortstops in the entire sport. 33 home runs, third among shortstops. 52 doubles, first among shortstops. 309 average, second among shortstops. This is one of the better players in the entire sport. So I would not be moving this guy whatsoever to get prospects. Everybody just imagines, oh, these prospects are going to be so great that you get back. Okay, well, I get it. The Red Sox have hit on a lot of young players through the years. You think about Mookie, obviously you hit there. Bogaerts, obviously you hit there. But Andrew Benintendi, he was a big-time prospect. Seventh overall pick on the draft. He's fine, but he's not great. Not to mention he's injured right now. Before that, he was having a horrible season. What about Blake Swihart, Henry Owens? So, yeah, you've had some good prospects come through here, but you've also had a lot of guys that haven't worked out. So I don't understand why you'd be moving on from a guy that plays one of the premium positions and is an elite player and has an elite bat. It makes no sense to me. And obviously the Devers thing is just ridiculous. So in my mind, what the Red Sox should be doing at the trading deadline, which is just a couple of a week and a half away now on August 31st, it's everybody else that you should be moving on from. It is the Mitch Moreland's of the world. It's the Brandon Workman's of the world. It's the Jackie Bradley Jr.'s of the world. I understand you're not going to get a whole lot for Jackie Bradley Jr., but it's better than just letting him walk. You could convince somebody, hey, this is a guy that was an ALCS MVP. This is a guy that plays Gold Glove caliber center field, right? So, and the other thing I would say about Workman is he is going to be considered the best reliever at the deadline. So if I'm the Red Sox, you know that these teams all across the sport, we've seen it with this team, they get desperate. Do teams across the sport, they get absolutely desperate for relievers. Every year we have this conversation about the Red Sox, what they could use, and they could use relief pitching, right? We have this same damn conversation every single season with the Red Sox when they're actually competitive. You got the best guy on the market, you should be able to fetch some quality back. And now this is when we start to find out some things about Chaim Bloom. I feel like he made out really well in the Mookie Betts trade, considering ownership made him put David Price in that deal. You picked up Alex Verdugo, who now has an 11-game hitting streak, who is, without question, an everyday player for you for the future. You picked up that guy, not to mention, you also may have picked up your second baseman of the future in Jeter Downs, who could be the second baseman starting in 2021 for the big league club. So I believe he made out well there. Now we find out what he can do, finding value at the deadline. They were very active in Tampa when he was there. They should be able to move a lot of pieces around here and restructure some things, and they really benefit from the fact there is not a lot of sellers out there because all these teams think they're in it. The Red Sox have a lot of guys that were part of that 18 World Series team that could, they could trade and they could get value back for these players. So Chaim Bloom's going to be judged by what he does at the deadline and then secondly, what he does next offseason to start the rebuild and start to get some young pitching and some guys that are close to the big leagues because that's what this team needs more than anything else. It's an injection of young talent in terms of the pitchers. So now Chaim Bloom, his job, now he's on the clock because he dealt with crappy situations ever since he inherited the job. Now this is why you hired Chaim Bloom, to wheel and deal and to rebuild. Now he's on the clock. All right, a lot more to get into. The number is 617-779-7937. If you want to weigh in on the Red Sox, what they should be doing at the trading deadline, certainly welcome to do that. If you want to react to this 7-1 win over the Orioles tonight, you can as well. But I also want to get to the Celtics as they now take a 2-0 series lead over the Philadelphia 76ers. And something I want to get to is Gordon Hayward. And there is evidence in the game last night that this team may be better off without Gordon Hayward. I'll explain what I mean by that in just a little bit, and we'll get you trending in just a second here.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Right back to what you want to hear. More of Brian Barrett on EEI.
Sam said on the radio, I think it was last week, that you know no one in the organization player-wise is untouchable. Is that kind of how you're operating in terms of conversations?
You know, I don't think that there's too much to read into that. That's just for me. You know, I've always believed in operating like that. I think if you, you know, to say that somebody is truly untouchable, you know, you're probably lying to yourself and lying to a player if you say that. There could be situations where there might be exceptions to that, but you know, I think we have to be realistic that in theory there could always be something that could happen, you know, with anybody. But I don't think that's indicative of any, you know, any big news or anything like that. I think it's just, you know, we're not doing our jobs if we're not willing to be open to opportunities.
All right, that's Chaim Bloom, the general manager of the Red Sox. He did mention the fact that Bogarts and Devers, those are the core players going forward. So those guys are not going to get moved. When you think about this team, though, they have an opportunity to try to start this rebuild up. You start to think about some of these teams that went for the quicker style rebuild, like the New York Yankees, right? You start to think about what they got for Chapman. They traded away Chapman at the deadline to the Cubs, and they ended up signing back Chapman. They got the number one player in that organization in Gleyber Torres, who we all know is a great player now for the Yankees, although he started the season slow. He did have a home run against the Sox over the weekend. Same thing, Andrew Miller, they got Clint Frazier for him. Now, I get that Frazier is not doing a whole lot for the Yankees, but if he was on basically any other team in the sport, he'd be getting significant playing time. So you can have a rebuild much quicker than other organizations because you still do have the power to go out and spend money in the offseason, and if it's not this offseason, in the 2021 offseason, right? So you're going to have those type of opportunities down the road. Chaim Bloom now, he has an opportunity to look at what he has on this team and how he wants it to look into the future. This is why you bring in Chaim Bloom, for the ability to restart the organization. That's what he's here for, to do what they did in Tampa, where he can make the most out of your resources. So this trading deadline and then heading into the offseason, that's when Chaim Bloom is going to earn his money. He has earned his money with some of the crap he's had to deal with, but this is when he starts to earn his money. So if it's me, Brandon Workman, this is a guy that you should be able to get something of value back for. And then you have to really think long and hard about the JD Martinez situation. This is a guy that tonight was not great, but you start to think about what he's done the past couple of years. He's been one of the best sluggers in the sport. He has an opt-out after this season. You have to have a talk with Scott Boras to figure out what his client is thinking. Because if he's going to opt out of that contract, you got to figure out what you're going to do with JD and what you think you can get back in return for the player. So that's a real tough conversation you're going to have in the next couple of days to figure out what you're going to do with JD Martinez. Because I don't think you just go into next offseason not knowing whether or not the player is opting into the contract. I just feel like that's borderline irresponsible. So you have got to get an answer from JD Martinez in the near future. 617-779-7937, the number. Let's get to Mike in North Providence. Hey, Mike.
Hi, Brian. Yeah, with regards to Xander, I think the central thing with him is the contract that he has. He is, he's the best player on the team. Mm-hmm. He's signed the 6-year, $120 million deal, and that becomes your model contract. In other words, like when Devers comes up for his extension, you can go and immediately point to Xander. See what Xander's getting paid? We're going to offer you something like that. And Devers knows that, that's pretty much where the Red Sox are as far as their position players, somewhere in that vicinity. So they're not bidding against themselves. And there are not that many teams in baseball that can offer these massive contracts. So the simple fact that they're kind of pulling themselves out of that does them a favor.
Yeah, Mike, and that's, like, Mike, to your point, one thing I'd like to see them do this offseason is try to buy out Devers' arbitration years and get a deal done with him early, like, say, for example, the Astros did with Alex Bregman, and like the Red Sox tried to do with Mookie Betts.
Yeah, I mean, and essentially what they did with Xander Bogaerts, mm-hmm. as far as getting out ahead of things. Another thing is, to me, I think that position players are actually kind of overpaid and overrated. Not that they're bad, it's just, to me, when you're talking about a offense, it's about being good 1 through 9. So it's having that batting order that has no weaknesses in it. I call it the Royals rule because the Kansas City Royals made it to 2 World Series, right? They had a pretty good offense, and they didn't have anybody on their team that was anywhere near as good as Mookie Betts, Xander Bogaerts, Rafi Devers, or J.D. Martinez, who we all had last year. And you know what? What did that get us? So it was one of these things where they had a good, solid team all the way through. They had good pitching, particularly in the bullpen, and I would be saving that money and advancing it towards that. And you brought up the Celtics.
Yeah.
Oh, another one quick thing too. I'm like in my head, Downs and Durant are my 8 and 9 hitters next year. Two guys who have a lot of talent who can hit down the order and not get paid anything, which is ideal. But as far as the Celtics with Gordon being out, the key thing for me is, if you look at the paradigm of the Golden State Warriors, you had 3 high-volume, high-efficiency scorers at the top, and everybody else is essentially a role player when it came to taking shots. And this sets them up for the Celtics right now to have Tatum, Brown, and Kemba be the guys who take most of the shots, and then everybody else kind of chips in with 5 shots or 6 shots. And serves as role players around them. And what we saw with Grant and Romeo in the last game is that's exactly what they did. They played defense. They took some opportunistic shots, and there was no need for like somebody like Gordon Hayward to go out there and try to score with the other three. And I think it just works out better that way.
Yeah, it's a good point. And Mike, I appreciate the phone call as always. His line's open if you want to grab it at 617-779-7937. In my mind, it's nothing against Hayward, and I agree with a lot of what Mike is saying, and I was going to get into this. So I agree with a lot of what he's saying. Here's the issue is, it felt like the Celtics, and I thought that Gordon Hayward leaving the bubble when his wife was going to give birth to their fourth child, and nothing against Gordon Hayward, I thought that would hurt the Celtics because, in my mind, he's their best playmaker. He was, in terms of distributing to other people. But the more I start to see this team play last night without Gordon Hayward, it came on me that, holy crap, when Gordon Hayward's not there, and look, we saw this earlier in the season when Kemba went out, where it became the Jason Tatum show. And Jason Tatum legitimately developed into a superstar when Kemba Walker was out of the equation because he had to take on more of the load. And when all four of those guys are there, it's almost one of these things where there's too many cooks in the kitchen. So now, like what we saw last night was when Jaylen went to the bench and when Kemba went to the bench and it was Tatum and the bench mob, that's when the Celtics made their run. And in that situation in the past, it wouldn't be what we saw with Tatum, where Tatum was consistently taking the ball up the floor. And it makes life easier on Brad Stevens, right? You don't have to have this equal opportunity offense anymore. And I'm not saying everybody gets the same amount of shots, right? Like, Romeo Langford's not getting the same amount of shots as Jaylen Brown. But you get the point. You had four guys that needed shots. Now you take one of those guys out of the equation, and Tatum now becomes the de facto ball handler when Kemba Walker's off the floor. So now Tatum's getting even more opportunities and even more cracks at it. And we saw him last night embrace that role, take the ball up the court, and look at what Tatum did. Had an unbelievable game where he had 33 points. And now going forward, as the Celtics get ready for the next series against the Raptors, because this thing is over. The Sixers suck. They are dead. They are dead and buried. This series is done. But when I look at it, this is better off not just for this version of the Celtics, the 2019-2020 version of the Celtics. This is much better for the future of the Celtics, where now the hierarchy has been determined, but now you know, okay, let's just let Tatum handle the ball more. And this is what you need in the postseason. You don't win with like this beautiful offense in the postseason. This is how you win in the postseason. Your best player has the ball in his hand all the time. LeBron with the Lakers and LeBron in the past with the Heat and the Cavaliers. You start to think about Durant with the Warriors. Yeah, during the regular season, they have this great offense, but what happens in the postseason? Everybody knows what you're running, so you give Durant the ball in isolation situations, and he scores. Kawhi Leonard with the Raptors last year. Kawhi Leonard now with the Clippers. We see it with the Mavericks, with Luka Doncic, who they won a game last night. In the postseason, you need your best player to have his hand and his pulse on the game for the majority of the time he's on the court. He's got enough sidekicks as Tatum, but this postseason is 100% about Tatum. That's why, in my mind, this team is better off without Gordon Hayward, without one of the big four, if you will, going forward. Because when all four of those guys are there, there's just too much confusion. The roles are too spread out. You need it to be a clear-cut pecking order, and this helps you have that clear-cut pecking order. All right, a lot more to get into. If you want to weigh in on the Red Sox, you can. If you want to weigh in on the Celtics, you certainly can as well. One other thing I saw last night in that game that makes me feel really, really good about this team going forward and their chances to actually get to the NBA Finals. Brian Barrett with you on WEI.
We're right back to it. This is Brian Barrett on EEI.
For a group effort to pick up without Gordon, but how much does it help when you have Jason and Jaylen and Kemba get going the way they did throughout the game to give you a balanced attack between those three guys?
All three of those guys made shots, did a lot of tough things. I thought the difference tonight, though, was our bench really took a game that was not going our way and changed it. So those guys did what they do, and we need them to keep doing what they do, and they're great at it, but I think it's appropriate to really give credit to them and our bench, because our bench was really good tonight.
No doubt about that. The bench was great for the Celtics last night. And by the way, I got to give Brad Stevens credit, because I've said that this is the postseason we're going to find out about Brad Stevens. He's going to prove himself this postseason. He got the extension, and eventually, not in this series, because he's coaching against Brent Brown, who is a terrible head coach, but Nick Nurse, Eric Spoelstra, Mike Budenholzer, a lot of good coaches in the Eastern Conference. And what Brad Stevens is doing right now, and I understand that Brett Brown doesn't have Ben Simmons, but he's coaching circles around the guy. Brett Brown looks like he's completely asleep at the wheel. It looked like when the Celtics went to that zone defense last night, the Sixers have never seen a zone defense before. How did you not think that the Celtics are going to throw that at you at some point, considering the fact that you have minimal shooting and Joel Embiid, a big guy, and the Celtics don't have anybody to match up with them one-on-one? You had to have prepared for that. And then it was almost like Brett Brown said in the second half, hey, let's try the defense they're playing, and they tried out their own zone, and how atrocious was their zone? Oh, was that pathetic. Oh, that team is dead. And how about Al Horford? I don't want to hear any of the green teamers saying, oh, Danny Ainge did a great thing getting rid of Al. No, he wanted him back, okay? He wanted Al Horford back. Since Al Horford let out that primal scream, where has he been? Man, did they dodge a bullet with that one. But getting back to the Tatum thing, and with the absence of Hayward, this now becomes the Tatum show, and this is how you win in the NBA. You don't win in the NBA because it's this great team game. No, you win with superstars, and then your GM does the role of putting the team around you. So Tatum's the superstar. He's ready to be the superstar of this team. Win or lose with Tatum, that's how you're going to win or lose. That's how I want to win or lose. I don't want to see this team win or lose because Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Kemba Walker, Tatum, they're all getting equal opportunities. No, that's not how it should work in the NBA. Tatum should be trying to carry this team, okay? And Kemba Walker, great second option. Jaylen Brown, great third option. You can change that if Jaylen be the number two option, Kemba be the number three option, however it works out. But every game, Jason Tatum should be making, or taking rather, the most shots on the team. He is capable of doing it. Last night he had 33. The game before that he was in the 30s as well. I want to see the ball in his hands for the majority of the time he's on the damn court. That's how this team is going to win championships in the future. It's because of Jason Tatum. Let's get to Kelly in Amherst. What's up, Kelly?
Hey, man. Look, a lot of nights Jason Tatum goes ice cold. He's got this Kobe Bryant Black Mamba mentality. God bless him. Rest in peace. I love him. But he's got this thing where, like you said, I got to take all the shots. Look, that was great in game two. That doesn't have to be the recipe every time. I don't want to argue about do you need a superstar or not. All I will say is this. I do think they're a little bit better with Gordon Hayward. I was saying that before, even before game two. But the comparison I always make is to the Detroit Pistons. And everybody says, oh, they're a flash in the pan. Oh, it happened one time. No, man, that was a great team. You know, they took down the Lakers. And the thing about that team, they had four guys. And I was thinking, oh, we could be like that. We'll have four guys. But their four guys were so different. You know what I mean? One of them was Ben Wallace, who never even looked to really shoot. He was just a big force underneath. Rashid was almost a superstar, whatever. But then you had, you know, like Rip Hamilton was so little and one-dimensional and skinny. He's always just going to be shooting jump shots. The guys on the Celtics, they do. They get in each other's way. Because
yeah, but Kelly, here's the difference, though. Those guys' skill set fit each other perfectly, right? So all Rip Hamilton was going to do offensively, he was going to run around screens, and they were going to find him for open jump shots. Rasheed Wallace at that particular point is a pick-and-pop guy. Occasionally, he'd go in the post, and Chauncey Billups is going to set everybody up, and you needed an ISO bucket. Chauncey Billups could break you down at the dribble. The problem with the Celtics is Kemba, Jaylen, Tatum, and Hayward all need the ball in their hands, and there's too many of those guys. There's too many cooks in the kitchen when all four of those guys are on the court at the same time. It works better when one's off the court. You can just look at it. When Kemba Walker missed all that time, that's when Tatum became a superstar. They're better off with one of those guys not in the lineup.
I completely agree. The only part that I disagreed on is the idea that we need to force feed Jason Tatum all the time. He's been hot. That's great. You know, we can ride him when he is. But one last thing, on a serious note, look, Brian Scalabrine said, and I laughed. I'll give it up. It was funny. When he said, oh, they said, what's Brett Brown need to do? He needs to look for a new job.
Yeah.
That's really funny. That is, you know, and I'm definitely not the type that says, you know, America needs to be more soft. I think we need to get more tough. People are getting too soft. You know, Snow Family watching this, that's messed up. He needs to be better than that. So for Scal, I think that was messed up. But Celtics, I'm pumped, and, you know, have a go.
Yeah, appreciate the call, Kelly. I don't have that big of an issue with Scal saying he needs to look for a new job. Yeah, that's the reality of the situation. He does. Brett Brown's going to get fired by the Sixers at the end of the season. It's not all his fault either. I'm not telling you he's a great basketball coach, but Elton Brand signed Al Horford. How is that ever going to work with Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons? How is that going to be a nice trio, so to speak? They let Jimmy Butler go because they didn't want to give him a fifth year. That was the best player on their team last year. He was the best player in the postseason for them. So it's not all about Brett Brown. It's the fact that the pieces there in Philadelphia, they don't fit. They don't work together well. So it's never going to work. It doesn't matter who the coach is. He's not going to get those guys to work. You need to separate Simmons and Embiid. I get Simmons is not playing right now, but even this team, it's not a well-constructed organization. The process is over, man. That thing is done. Brett Brown's going to be gone. And I would imagine that Elton Brand is going to have to do something in the near future with those two superstars because they do not work together. All right, I'll be back with you tomorrow night after the Sox and the Orioles. Thanks to Dylan for producing. Have a great rest of your night and early morning. Be safe and be well.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.